Hey everyone, welcome back to the Pursuit of Service podcast. Really excited about today's episode and some big news. My co-host Brian has a book coming out this week. And so we're going to talk about that and some of the lessons there. The book is called Mighty: 7 Skills You Need to Move from Pandemic to Progress. And so you can't have anything more relevant than that type of topic. And that's what we're going to discuss today. So get your notebook out, get your cell phone out to go to the Amazon app and get the book. We'll talk about that at the end. But you're going to love this discussion on Mighty. Hey, Brian, how's it going?
Hey, Jeff, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great because I'm really excited about today's discussion and the book release.
Yeah, it is an exciting week, isn't it? So yeah. we're taping this on Monday. The book officially releases tomorrow on Tuesday the 21st. So yeah, we're very excited.
Yep, and we will release it on the same day that we're recording. So as you listen to this, it comes out tomorrow, folks. But you can definitely go and pre-order it even today if you're just that excited about it, which you should be.
Well, thank you. I agree. Now, if you're a Kindle reader, it's just the book publishing industry. You can't get Kindles till the day it's released.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you're a Kindle person, you have to wait till the 21st. But yeah, you can definitely go ahead and get in line and pre-order your copies now if you'd like. So
one thing, just as an aside, that's interesting to me about Amazon is I've pre-ordered books before and they time it such that the arrival to your doorstep is on the release day. So they don't wait till the release day to ship it. It gets there on the release day, which I think is pretty cool. Yeah. But moving on to Mighty, I didn't have that problem this time because you were gracious and kind enough to give me an advanced copy. And I can tell you that I love this one. This might be my favorite book of yours. Or Timeless. Timeless is pretty classic too. But I just love this in the application. So I can speak to it for the listeners that you will benefit if you go pick it up. But let's just get into the premise, the idea. How did you come up with this, you know, Mighty idea, Mighty 7 Skills You Need to Move from Pandemic to Progress?
Yeah, it really was, Jeff, a merging of about 3 different things. In some ways, it's the sequel to 2021, the year in leadership, in some ways, because the majority of the content, other than the biblical applications, all came from the year 2022. So, you know, you've got your biblical lesson, which we'll get into, your biblical principle, but then you got modern day applications. So in that sense, it's a lot like Mighty. It's a lot like Timeless in that sense. So I like writing that style. I like all the articles I've written throughout the year, collecting them in a central location, specifically a book. So I like that concept. I like that idea. That being said, our good friend Robert Carnes, who's been on the podcast before and is a great writer, and I recommend you picking up his books. He gave me some advice. We had lunch last year and he goes, you know, 2021 is great. He goes, but it's chronological. You should actually break it up into categories. And there, that way it's not sequential, but it's in categories. It might read easier if somebody likes a specific topic. So I just filed that away, I just filed it away. And so you've got that principle. So you've got how I like to write, some great feedback from Robert. And then about a little in 2021, I actually, there's just a short chapter in there on David's mighty men. And I had to do some devotions at work and I taught David's mighty men. And then in the men's conference that you led for our church last year, you had me do a breakout and I did David's Mighty Men. Mm-hmm. And the reason I picked David's Mighty Men for the breakout is because it got such great feedback at work. And so got great feedback again. And I'm thinking, okay, number one, I love that content. Number two, I think it's incredibly relevant where we are today. And number three, I could take Robert's idea and break it into the categories, the 7 skills, and do what I enjoy doing, which is that chronological type writing mm-hmm. and that historically based writing. And I can actually now put it in the categories. So really, feedback from the audience, existing content I've already written, feedback from other authors, and I kind of blended it all together. And also, you know, just read books, you know, continual learning on how to be a better writer and how to impact more people through your writing. And the title of it, notice it's one word, mighty. So the research that I did said a lot of great books now are one word, like drive yeah. or outliers or, you know, tribes, mm-hmm. you know, it's one word and then a subtitle.
Yeah.
So, okay. So that's where the word mighty came from, was from learning that. And the other thing I did is the word you is in the title, seven mm-hmm. skills you need. And so we'll get to this later on. But no, this book's about helping people. It's about helping people through a tough time. This book is written for you, not me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is just a nice stew or potpourri of a lot of learnings and a lot of ideas I've gotten, but hopefully packaged and put together with some great content that'll really help some people, you know, who might be struggling coming out of the pandemic and trying to figure out how to move forward in the most productive manner possible.
Yeah, that's tremendous, because I think everybody is doing that to some extent. I mean, obviously the world is different. So how we lead out of and after a crisis probably shouldn't be the same way that we led prior to. So it's just so timely. I would echo, you know, I love the format of this one. Because it, like you said, it combines them both. It's a sequel to 2021, but it also feels much like kind of a co-sequel to Timeless, because right. you're starting on a biblical character or person, and then the application is there, and you still get the observation from throughout the year. But the other thing that I really love about it, just like Timeless, is you have the practical applications at the end of each chapter. And just what a tremendous self-evaluation tool, whether you're going through on your own as a leader evaluating, or going through with your team, or going through with your small group, or I know you even mentioned as a pastor, if you're getting ready for a sermon series or leading it with your staff. So I love that about that. How do you take the lessons of each chapter and turn that into a practical question?
Yeah, so that's great insight, Jeff, and I'm so glad you brought that. That's why this book, can you read it alone and enjoy it? Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. But this book was not written to be done alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this book is written for pastors with sermon series or small group or discipleship pastors, for the people in their church to go through it together. Or if you're, you know, a leader in business or in the marketplace or an athletic director or coach, you take your teams through it. So the way that I come up with the questions is, you know, it's obviously it has to do with the chapter. You know, if you ever want to disciple somebody or lead somebody or equip somebody, we really make that very difficult when it doesn't have to be. It can be as easy as you give somebody a book and you say, what'd you read? What'd you learn? Mm-hmm. How are you applying it? Those yeah. are the three questions I learned from Dan Rylan. If he's discipling somebody or coaching somebody, he just gives them a book. They do it together. What'd you read? What'd you learn? How are you applying it? So the questions at the end of each chapter have to do with the content of that chapter. It's what we read, what we learn, and how are we applying it? And there's five questions at the end of each chapter. So like I said, I mean, it's for self-study and self, you know, evaluation and personal growth, perfect for you. But if you got a team, yeah, it talks about that chapter and it just pulls some of the concepts from that chapter. Like chapter one is productivity. So mm-hmm. one of the questions is, would you consider yourself a productive person and why? Would others consider you productive and why? What can you do to become more productive? Mm-hmm. So very practical application questions that can really help a person get better.
Yeah, I mean, can you even imagine how valuable it is to, especially the second half of that first question, do you consider yourself productive and why? It's easy to say, yeah, I'm productive. it takes a little more thought work and honesty to say, why is that, as along with what would other people say about me? So from a team leadership perspective, if you're going through this with, you know, with the team or something like that, you can ask these questions of each other and get that real-time feedback.
Yeah. And none of the questions are close-ended. You know, mm-hmm. every question is like, you know, tell about a time or explain something, or would you consider yourself this and why? Would other people consider you this and why? So yeah, great discussion time, great time for self-evaluation, reflection. And yeah, that's how the book's structured, and that's why it's set up that way.
And that makes it very interactive. So as if reading to learn isn't enough, now you're interacting with it and applying. So that's great.
Here's the thing too. And I'll let say on that. Now let's get to your next question. It's a fun read.
It is. Yes.
I mean, it's sports, it's church, it's business, it's family, it's faith. It's a fun read, you know, I'm not talking about neuroscience in this, you know, which is obviously very important, but it's over my head. So, you know, you're not going to get that out of this. But yeah, you'll enjoy it on an individual level, and your team will enjoy going through it too. So,
yeah, I concur with that. It is fun. It is enjoyable. It's easy to keep going, and it's hard to put it down. I can attest to that. So you mentioned the first chapter, productivity, a second ago. Just talk through the rest of the chapters at a high level.
Yeah.
Just let us know what they are.
So yeah, if you walk through David's Mighty Men, this is a section of scripture found in Second Samuel chapter 23. And David, the time period is from 1018 to 1014 BC. And David's on the run from Samuel. Samuel's not big on succession planning. You know, he knows David's the next guy. So, you know, he's out to kill him, literally. And he's on the run. And while he's on the run, he encounters a large number of people who are disenfranchised as well. And he becomes, in essence, the leader of this collection of people. But there's 37 unique individuals that would be known as David's Mighty Men that he formed into this elite tactical and fighting unit. Okay. And so the passage in 2 Samuel really breaks down specifically who five of these individuals are. All 37 are listed, but five of them, they're actually talked about. And so we get the lessons from them. So here's the skills. Number one's production. What will you produce? If you're going to be a great leader moving forward, there's going to have to be some production. We'll get into production more. It's my favorite chapter, so I'll save that for later. Number two is passion. Okay, so passion is owning the result. And so we get into passion. Perseverance is number three, or resilience. Okay, that is a stick-to-itiveness that's necessary to be able to lead moving forward. We're just in a society that, does not have the level of resilience that previous generations have had. And I'll just leave it at that. Number four is teamwork. Okay. So what happens when you come together, and what can you accomplish together as a unit? By the way, the first three individuals that are discussed with those first three attributes that I talked about come together to serve David with the fourth attribute, and that's where we get teamwork. Mm. Next is contentment. Okay. Contentment is not to be confused with complacency. Yeah. You want to become everything God created you to be, but there is an understanding that God has given you a spiritual address at this point in time in human history to accomplish something great for him. And what do you need to do that? Next is courage. Okay. And so you do have to have the courage to move forward. And we talk about that. And finally, it's faith. Interestingly, in two particular verses in 2 Samuel chapter 23, it's talking about these individuals, and they're extraordinary people, just extraordinary people. But on two different occasions, it says, and the Lord gave them the victory.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a chapter that, hey, we can do everything we can do. Those first six things, courage, passion, my mind's going blank, teamwork, contentment, all of those things that we do, you can do them all. And you can do them at a very, very high level. But ultimately, at the end of the day, our skills and abilities, one thing COVID taught us is that we are very limited in what we can do. Mm-hmm. And it reminded us of our humanity. It reminded us of our inefficiencies. It stripped away all non-essentials. It exposed how really ridiculous arrogance and that those type of qualities are. And ultimately, you can do all six things and you should do all six things, but you still need the Lord to ultimately give you the victory. Mm-hmm. So faith is number seven.
That's great. So that leads me just to wonder out loud. You mentioned production was your favorite chapter. Which do you think is the most important?
Well, faith would be the most important, because without the Lord, you're not going to get the victory. So I do walk chronologically through that, mm-hmm. through that series of passages. So faith is last. So if you're a non-Christian and you're reading this and you don't want to have anything to do with the faith chapter, that's fine. The first six still apply to you. Mm-hmm. You'll still need to know the first six. But ultimately, it's the Lord that gives the victory. And, if we want to do something that has, eternal impact in our life. And really, I wrote my first book simply because I wanted to accomplish something and have my name on something. Mm-hmm. That's why I wrote my first book. I just wanted to put my flag down, but this is my fourth book. I've matured as a human being, over the last 12 mm-hmm. years. And, ultimately what I've learned is, as much as we want to accomplish in this world, the only thing that has everlasting meaning or eternal impact, or really transformational instead of transactional impact on a person's life, yeah, that only happens if the Lord actually does it through you. So to answer the question, what's the most important? Chapter 7, faith, without a doubt.
Amen. One other bonus for everybody, and I don't want you to tell what they are. We're going to save it for the book, but I love the beginning where you have the 25 leadership axioms. So just tell what those are without giving any away and how you accumulated or put them together over time.
Well, you're right. Those 25 axioms are the leadership principles I live my life by. When you say, okay, Brian, if you could only tell me 25 things about leadership, and if you could only base your life around 25 leadership principles, what would they be? That's them. And you're right. They've been accumulated over a lifetime. It's taken 57 years to write those two pages. And it's funny, Jeff, when I started writing, I just had 10. I just wanted 10, one page, mm-hmm. and I couldn't stop at 10, So I did 25, got a couple of pages out of it. And, okay, Brian, I'll give you a simple one. And it's just one I've dealt with recently. The only difference between anger and danger is a D.
Hmm.
That's a leadership principle I live by. That if I lose my temper, nothing good's going to come out of it.
Yeah.
I've always been amazed at how Jesus could get angry and flip over the tables and yet not sin. I've not mastered that. If I get pushed to that place, it usually doesn't turn out well for me. So there you go. That's one of the 25 axioms. The only difference between anger and danger is a D. But there's 24 others. But those are the leadership principles I live my life by.
That's great. So you mentioned that this is your fourth book. What did you learn in this iteration? What was different about it, or what have you learned over time as you came to this fourth one?
Yeah, Jeff, and this is the big lesson I learned from this book, okay? My first book, The 10 Indispensable Practices of the Two-Minute Leader, I wrote that book because I wanted to make my mark in the world. I just wanted to count for something. That's about as spiritually immature as you can be, because your identity and your worth are found in Christ, not whether you can write a book or not. But I just wanted it that, okay, if somebody was hassling me or demeaning me or something like that, I could look at them and go, let me point this out. When you or your kids or your grandkids or your great grandkids, if Jesus doesn't come back, you walk through that Library of Congress, you're reading my name if you find it in the right place. You know, I just wanted to put my name on something. So that's why I wrote my first book. Now, it's a great book. It's a fantastic book. I'm really proud of it. All four of my books, by the way, you know, they're like your kids. Which one's your favorite? You know, they're all they're like your kids. But my second book, Timeless. That was an answer to a question I wanted to know the answer to. It was a research project. Mm-hmm. You know, the best leaders who have ever existed, regardless of industry, what is the common threads that they all had? You know, best pastors, best churches, best businesses, best CEOs, best athletes, best teams, you know, and is there a biblical framework around that? So that was a personal research project, and I'm glad people enjoyed it, and I enjoy it. And to be honest, it's still from time to time, 5 years afterwards, it shows up on some bestseller list. So I love Timeless. Third book was the book I always wanted to write, 2021, The Year in Leadership. I wanted to take all my best articles from Brian Dodd on leadership and package them and sell them as a book. I always wanted to do that. Ironically, my website was never started to be a website. It was started to house content that would be a book. Hmm. So I always wanted to write that. Now, no publisher would ever do it, you know, so I self-published it, which is fine. And I actually love that whole process and self-published Mighty. Okay, but here's the thing. All three of them books, Jeff, were written for me. Mm. I wanted to put my name on something. I wanted to answer a question I was interested in, and I wanted to write the book I always wanted to write. Okay? Mighty is the first book I ever wrote for other people. Mm. And, you know, once again, I mean, we referenced it earlier, but it's in the title, Seven Skills You Need to mm-hmm. Move from Pandemic to Progress. It's the first book I ever wrote for other people. And the interesting thing about it, Jeff, in terms of pre-sales, it's the most successful book I've ever written.
That's great.
And there was even one day, it was a Saturday, a couple of weeks ago, it was the number one bestseller for church leadership for new releases.
That's fantastic. Well deserved.
And well, thank you. But here's the lesson for me. If you live your life being about other people and serving other people and caring about the needs of other people and meeting the needs of other people, God winds up taking care of you and meeting all your needs through that process. It's just a mm-hmm. byproduct of it. And you're not focused on it, but it just happens. So this was the first book that was ever for other people, not for me, and it's the most successful of the four books. So the lesson for me is simply this. When I get on the books 5, 6, and 7, they're going to be for other people, you know. But I would encourage everybody listening, all of you have something you want to accomplish. That's why you're listening to a leadership podcast. I mean, there's something you want to do great in the world. There's a place you want to take people to. You want to take them from where they are to this preferred future, this vision that you have of where people's lives can be better. All of you want to accomplish something great. But if you really want to accomplish something great, it's got to be about serving other people, and it's got to be about other people, and it's got to be about making other people's lives better. And when your focus is on that, it's a Zig Ziglar. If you help people get what they want, you'll wind up getting what you want. And you don't do it for that reason, but that was the biggest lesson I got from writing this book.
Yeah, I mean, it's no coincidence. One of the things I like to talk about or say is that in order to be considered valuable, because we all want to be looked at as valuable, as value added, in order to be considered valuable, you have to first add value.
Absolutely.
And so that's the paradox of if you live for other people, you will ultimately benefit from it because you are adding value and you will be considered valuable. That's why we say serve others not as a task, but as a purpose, because then you'll accomplish your wildest dreams beyond your wildest imagination. You don't even know it, you know? So that's great. One of the things you mentioned a second ago was that you self-published, this one and 2021. Talk a little bit about the differences in that process, what you like, what you don't like, what you prefer.
Okay, so I did use a publisher for my first two books and had a wonderful experience. This was nothing against the publishers at all. Wonderful experience with my first two publishers. You know, the interesting thing about when you write a book, it's same with the music industry also, but if you go through a publisher, technically they own the content. You know, you don't own the content. Technically they do, you know. And so on my third book, I'd been told a chronological walk through a year and a collection of great articles. No publisher wanted to publish that. You know, they wanted to make it a narrative or solve a problem or, you know, address an issue or something. And I totally get that. And I totally respect that. So on this one, two things converged. This was on 2021. I wanted to own my own content. Okay. And I was willing to take a risk on that as well. So that's another thing you got to do. Number two, like I said, that was the book I always wanted to write. And I understand why publishers didn't want to write that. I get it. You know, no disrespect. I totally respect that. But I self-published my third book. I paid for editing. I would advise anybody who ever wants to write a book, pay for the editing. The editing, okay, here's the whole thing on editing. You don't write a book, Jeff, you rewrite a book. Over and over and over and over again. Writing the book is not the work. You know, that's the fun. That's the enjoyment. That's your idea coming to life and getting on paper. But when you take this little baby that you've birthed and you've handed to somebody else and they tell you, well, you have a cute baby, but it's kind of ugly, you know, and it comes back and it's marked up in red everywhere. Yeah. And you have to now go back and start rewriting it and all of that. Number one, it's a pain. Number two, it's incredibly humbling. Because you're just thinking, this is the greatest book since War and Peace. This will be the one book that is perfect the way it's written. And it's not even close, you know. But here's the thing I would say. Pay for the editing, even if you self-publish. Every time I've used an editor, it's been a challenge. It's been tough. But the book has turned out 100 times better than it was originally sent in every time. What's funny, Mike Lynch, our mutual friend and the pastor at North Star Church, he wrote the foreword to this book. So I had to give him the very first draft. So that way he knows what he's actually endorsing and writing the foreword for. I told him because it took about 10 rewrites to get it to the form that it's in now. And I told him, I said, I apologize to you. You got that thing and it was bad. I mean, there's grammar errors. There's stuff that's not accurate that you had to go back and fix. I mean, it's bad. So anyway, but yeah, I self-publish. I love the fact that I own my own content. I love the fact that, okay, the whole creative process is on me, but I still pay for the editing, without a doubt.
Good. So are you going to self-publish going forward?
You know, it's interesting. I got to be honest. This is where the realism comes in. If a publisher ever approaches me and says, Brian, we want to give you a $20,000 book advance. I probably will not self-publish.
I'll take you.
For lack of a better phrase, my ideas and my concepts and all of that could definitely be for sale for the right price. There's no doubt about that. But unless I get approached with a five-figure offer, I'll probably self-publish moving forward. So
That's funny. Last question on sort of the process, because I've always been curious when it comes to the editing process. Once it's finally done, do you actually read it all the way through in its final form, or are you so ingrained in it that that's redundant?
Okay, here's the thing, and that is a great question. I probably read mighty 25, 30 times.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, because here's the thing, editors ain't perfect either.
Yeah.
And so, like, if they correct a paragraph or something like that, I'm still reading the paragraph. And, you know, I'll give you a very simple example. When I wrote the original manuscript and turned it in, Georgia was a one-time national champion. So I'm sitting here and I'm reading the edited version, and it talks about Georgia being a one-time national champion. Well, by that time, they're a two-time national champion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I've got to update it. You know, that's just a very practical example.
Right.
So, yes, I will read. And that's part of the hard work, that you got to go back through your book again. And, Jeff, it's funny. You've got to read everything. You've got to read all the endorsements,
mm-hmm.
you know, to make sure that their grammar's correct. You got to reread your back cover. You know, I mean, you've got to reread everything. And so, yeah, that's part of the heavy lifting of publishing a book.
That's great insight. One day I'll know what that's like. I'm going to write a book. Yes, one day. We'll see. So last question, back to the content. So there are a number of stories. We talked about the different chapters and the themes and things of that nature. But is there a single story in the book, like a single character or athlete or leader or coach or something like that, that really just stands out?
Well, my favorite chapter in the book, and ironically, once you get through the introductions and all that, it's chapter one, and it's just how I'm wired. Mm-hmm. So if a listener is wired a different way, they'll have a different favorite chapter. So I don't think the quality of chapter one is better than the quality of any other chapters. It's just that chapter speaks to me.
Yeah.
And that's the chapter on production.
Yeah.
And one of David's mighty men, actually the chief of his mighty men, was a guy named Josheb Bashabeth. And what you learn about Josheb Bashabeth is not only was he the chief, but he killed 800 men with a spear. Now, here's the interesting thing for me. I am prone to hyperbole. You know, I'll be like, oh, gosh, greatest thing I've ever eaten.
Mm.
Okay, well, it was a burrito at a Mexican restaurant. You know, it was nice, you know, yeah. But I'll have an equally good burrito probably within a week. After that, you know, but the Bible doesn't, if it says he killed 800 men with a spear, he killed 800 men with a spear.
Mm-hmm.
And so from what we learn from Josheb Bashabeth is production. He was a man of high production. And so I really begin to break down, okay, if I mentally insert myself into the story and I'm actually there with Josheb Bashabeth, we're friends. We're walking through the wilderness, and you know, I write in the book, but there could have been a bounty on him because he was the chief of David's mighty men. So there could have been a bounty on him. He could have just stumbled on the army. You know, they just walked on up upon each other. Or this man was a mighty warrior. He might have been hunting them, seeking them out. You know, mm-hmm. Regardless, if I'm there with him and we encounter this group of individuals, and he says, Brian, get behind me. You know, I need to take care of this. And I back up about 100 yards because some of those guys on the other side probably got bow and arrow. So mm-hmm. I'm safely behind a rock or a tree about 100 yards back. But then I watch this guy go to work. Okay. What do I learn about production watching him kill 800 enemy soldiers?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I learned things about efficiency. You know, there's no wasted movement. He's edited his life. He's become a master at his craft. He knows how mm-hmm. to use a spear.
Yeah.
The man is skilled at what he does, you know, and I learn about physical health. You know, if you've ever seen two grown adults get into a fight, not professional combat like MMA or pro wrestling or boxing or anything like that, but like a little league game,
mm-hmm.
you notice something very quickly. Number one, it doesn't last long. Number two, usually whoever lands the first punch, it's over. And number three, both people are exhausted when it's over. You know, the adrenaline and all that. This man killed 800 people, so his physical health had to be an elite level. So in the chapter, I really break down those three things. I break down being a master of your craft. I break down physical health. I break down efficiency and editing out your life and no wasted movement and how to prioritize things. So I'm wired for production. You know, I'm wired to put pelts on the wall, so to speak, or something like that. I'm just wired for that. So because I'm wired for that, that's my favorite chapter. Now, somebody else may be wired for courage or resilience or passion or teamwork. They love being parts of a team. Okay. They're going to love those chapters.
Yeah.
So really, however you're wired, the quality of the chapters is all the same. I think they're all equally compelling, but I think each chapter is going to speak to you based upon your unique wiring and your unique DNA.
Fantastic. Any other parting thoughts on the book?
No, I hope everybody gets copies, because once again, this is not to be done alone, you know. And if you're a leader on here, and that I don't picture anybody who listens to this not being a leader. So here's what I know about you as a leader. You're trying to equip people, mobilize people, serve people, and take people from point A to point B, whatever that point A is and whatever that point B is. And you need tools and resources to do that. And leaders are readers. And, you know, there's the old saying, how much is a good idea worth? Okay. Well, the book on Amazon, I think, is $17.69 or something like that. And when it comes out on Kindle, it'll probably be $9.99 or something like that. Here's the deal. Every page in this book has great leadership content. There is no wasted pages. That's another thing about self-publishing. If you go through a publisher, they have a certain page number and a certain word count. So if you read a lot of books, there's a lot of filler. A lot of times you can have the main idea in the first 75 to 100 pages.
Yeah.
And I get it. Once again, totally get that, totally respect that. This book's over 200 pages, not a page wasted. So you'll love the book. It's a meaty book. It's an applicable book. It's a fun book. And if you lead people, just sit down with them and say, hey, I got this for you. I'd love for us to go through this together. I've heard some great things about it. And why don't we just do a chapter a week and just come back? There's questions at the end and we'll just talk about it. And we'll just try to get better as leaders. I would love for everybody to pick up copies, obviously for themselves, but for people they influence as well. So
that's great. Call it discipleship, call it leadership development, call it personal development. It applies to all. Well, Brian, there's no one like you. You're on your own level when it comes to observing leadership and translating to practical application. And this book is no exception. So thanks for all the work that you put into it. And thanks for sharing with us today about it.
Well, you are more than welcome, Jeff. And look, like I said, I'm wired for production. So are you, by the way, you know, and every time, you know, our busy schedules somehow open up just a little bit to align. I love this podcast. I love the content we provide. It's an honor to invest in our audience. And yeah, it's an honor to serve them and to serve them with you. So thanks for all you do.
Yeah, thank you. Everyone, go get the book. That book will help you to serve others, not as a task, but as a purpose.